Welcome to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Now, your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And we're back for another fun-filled episode of the M Squared TechCast.
Always fun-filled.
Indeed. We've got a great show for you today. We've got just about all the tech bases covered. We've got the WannaCry ransomware attack, some information on that, mobile apps and their growth in Michigan. We've got the Women Tech Founders Panel of Detroit Startup Week. We'll be talking about that a little bit later. We're kicking it off with our drone law expert, Enrico Schaefer. But before we do that, I wanted to thank Mike for a couple of tickets to a very nice wine tasting event yesterday in Port Huron. It was done by the Thumbs Up Wine Trail, which is, I guess, a client of yours now.
Yep.
And it was a great wine tasting event in Port Huron. There were, I don't know, 15 or so wineries there. A lot food. Of really good food from Port Huron restaurants. And some of the wine was just really good, which you wouldn't, you know, I don't think of Michigan's Thumb as being a particularly distinguished area for wine. But some of that stuff, there are really talented people in the wine business everywhere in Michigan, and it shows.
But not so much on the mead, right?
I didn't really care for the mead. Yeah. Too sweet.
Too sweet.
Yeah, I'm a dry red kind of guy. So,
okay. Yeah.
But it was really good.
Speaking of dry red kind of guys, I think it's a good segue.
Okay.
Our man about town, our bon vivant from Traverse City, I'm not sure, where are you today, Enrico?
Oh, no, I'm back in Traverse City.
Oh, you are?
Great place to be. Speaking of good wine, that's a great place to be.
That's where I was going with this.
All right.
You know, it was a logic. So Enrico comes on every month, talks about what's happening in drone law or just drones in general or all sorts of issues today. But one of the things he's going to be talking about, and I don't know much about this either, so I'll be learning just like you, is the Great Lakes Drone Racing Cup. What's that all about?
Yeah, so the Great Lakes Cup is the first large-scale drone race in the Midwest, and it is a big event that is going to be held at Van Andel Arena in Grand Rapids, so really big venue, indoor racing. Hmm. You have these skilled pilots flying these quadcopters through three-dimensional courses at up to speeds up to 80 miles per hour.
Good.
If you've seen drone racing on TV, you see that the pilots actually wear these special goggles that provide first-person view, which they're essentially seeing what the camera of the drone is seeing out the front, and so it's actually like they're on board the drone, and it displays a live image to their goggles, and of course the fans can see what the drone pilots are seeing. And they're racing through this course at really high speeds. It's really cool. It's one of the fastest growing sports in the United States right now.
Wow. And what's the date on that?
So the date is July 21st through the 23rd at Van Andel Arena in Grand Rapids. Anyone can enter. Okay. There are qualifying races in the first day or two, and then there's the championship at the end. Each day you've got prize money of $1,000 for first place. You've got $500 for second place and $250 for third. Mm. And then in the final day where the winners get to advance there, there's additional prize money for those winners of $2,500 for the first place, $1,500 for the second place, and $750 for the third place plus trophies. So it's going to be a really big deal. It's being coordinated with the top drone racing organizations in the country, MultiGP, who currently has like 12,000 registered racers across, 800 plus chapters internationally. So Michigan's got 300 drone racers registered with MultiGP. So you can see it's an up and coming sport with some really interesting spectator possibilities.
So are you going to be racing? I know you have drones.
We are going to be sponsoring one of the female drone racers. We're always looking to bring more women into drones in general, including the sport. So we are the official law firm representing the Great Lakes Cup, and we're also going to be participating on site as well and sponsoring one of the racers.
So if there's crashes, you're going to be right there to represent the aggrieved parties, right?
The way that works is we will be blinding our eyes so that we are not witnesses.
Oh, okay, perfect.
Can provide the representation since we didn't see anything.
Yes. I would imagine there is mutual indemnification among the racers, right?
So instead of 1-800 call Sam, it's 1-800 call Enrico. You know, so
call Enrico. It's funny because people certainly expected that there would be more injuries from drones just in general. Not necessarily drone racing, but just drone operation across the United States. And interestingly, there's just been a few, sometimes pretty funny, but just a few injuries reported. A serious side, there was a little girl who lost her eye and permanently lost her vision in one eye as a result of getting hit by a blade. And then, of course, there was the groom who had the drone who flew the unit into his wedding party and injured a couple of his wedding party. They are not going to be on any of the guest lists coming up because there's litigation between those two factions. But beyond that, there's not been a lot of reported cases of injury.
Yeah, I know you mentioned that previously. Where does that stand? Is that still being litigated? I'm kind of curious to see how that turns out.
You know, unclear. My guess is it got settled. And usually there's insurance for this kind of thing. And since negligence is sometimes pretty obvious when you've got that many witnesses. If you crash your drone into people, it's hard to defend that unless there's some sort of manufacturing defect in the unit.
Okay.
All right. So tell us a little bit about what else is going on in the world of drone law. We hear that an attorney took the FAA to court on a registration rule and won when it came to model aircraft anyway.
Yeah. The guy's name is John Taylor. And he really kind of took on the FAA as is the point person in this litigation of Taylor versus the FAA. And it dealt with, in December of 2015, the FAA decided it was going to require recreational drone users to register their aircraft. And so what you had to do is you had to go to a special webpage on the FAA.gov website. You had to put in your personal identifiable information into the system, and then you had to agree that you were not going to do any number of different things like fly near aircraft, engage in any sort of unreasonably risky behavior, stay away from airports, these types of things, and then you would get a registration number, and then you would put that registration number on all your drones, and so you kind of register in that way. The problem was that Congress had previously stated in 2012, when it first directed the FAA to come up with drone regulations, in response to the Academy of Model Aeronautics, the AMA, the Congress said to the FAA, you cannot regulate recreational drone use, essentially. And what happened is that there started to be a lot of reports of drones near aircraft. So the FAA said, oh, we're going to make recreational drone users register their aircraft. And then we could put these rules in front of them and have them say, I agree. And then maybe we can affect their behavior and get them to fly more safely, which was a totally legitimate goal. The problem is, because of the 2012 Act, the court ruled that the FAA was, in fact, enacting a rule or regulation regarding model aircraft, and that it violated that particular congressional directive, and therefore the registration rule had to go. And so now we're kind of back at this point where we probably should have been a couple years ago, which is someone really wants to regulate recreational drones. They should go to Congress, and then Congress should pass a law which directs the FAA as to what they should and should not do on the recreational side of drone use. And, of course, you guys know, because we talk about this, there's a big difference between flying your drone for a business purpose and flying it for fun. Mm-hmm. If you're flying it for a business purpose, it's fairly highly regulated. There's lots of rules you need to understand. And if you get some sort of business benefit out of the drone footage or data, then it's a business purpose. If you're just flying for fun, then it's recreational, and You still have to conform to community standards and national standards in terms of general guidelines, but it's far less regulated than the commercial activity.
So if I was shooting video that I then used, because you know I'm playing around with video now, that I then used some commercially, whatever I'm doing, would that then make me a commercial drone user? I mean, a business one or what?
Well, it's a really slippery slope because the FAA's point of view is if your purpose of your flight had some business benefit, whether or not you're paid or not, if mm-hmm. it had a business purpose or a business benefit mm-hmm. at the time that you flew the flight, then it's commercial.
Oh.
What happens, though, is people who are flying recreationally then sometimes say, hey, I should use this footage for commercial purposes, and then they put it on their business website or they use it for some business purpose. And then the question becomes, well, were you really flying for recreational purposes back then? And because that's an intent, a mm-hmm. subjective thing in your brain as the pilot,
yeah.
how do you ever prove what your purpose was, and how does the FAA prove that it was commercial? And the last thing you want to do is end up in a spitting match with the FAA over these issues. So you have to be careful.
Hmm. Interesting.
So yeah, even if you capture some really cool image or video or something like that and decide to put it on a website that you're connected to, you might want to think twice about that, it sounds like, unless you want to be classed as a commercial user.
Yeah, exactly. And there's ways that you can mitigate that risk. You could put on the video that the video was taken on X date for recreational purposes so that at least, you know, you can put that out there. You know, the FAA's enforcement resources are extremely limited, so the odds of having a problem are phenomenally low. But if you do end up being the test case, it's going to cost you some money to deal with it. You don't want to have to deal with it.
Yeah, and who wants to have to lawyer up?
Right? Yeah, exactly. Right. Boy, those guys are expensive, too, I think. You know, so, hey, we're only going
to...
If you do, well, if yeah, you do have to lawyer up, though, Enrico is definitely your man
He's
when
the
it comes
man.
To drone law.
Well, then, now we've got about a minute and a half left. We're going to let you do the shameless plug. Hit the bell.
Okay.
Okay. Tell folks about your law firm, Drone Law Pro. Go ahead. Take it away.
All right, www.dronelaw.pro. So it's one of the things that we do here at Traverse Legal, which is our law firm. We represent companies in the new and emerging technology space, and we probably represent as many or more drone pilots and operators than any other law firm in the country, and with hundreds of different clients across a lot of different SUAS, small and manned aerial system issues. And so if you need to contact us, the best way is to go to the website, www.dronelaw.pro.
All right. Enrico Schaefer from Drone Law Pro in Traverse City with all the latest on drone law. He is here every month on the M2 TechCast. Thanks for being here, Enrico. And for right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M2 TechCast.
It's Mike Brennan.
And it's Matt Rausch. And you're listening to the M2 TechCast, proudly part of the PodcastDetroit.com family of fine radio podcasts. Listen every day, all day, whenever you can, just all the time, around the clock.
Absolutely. That's why we have those lovely MP3s. You can do that whenever you want.
All right.
On demand. And we have with us Nick Lumsden. I'm going to get it right this time, Nick. I know I am. Lumsden. I got it right?
Yes.
Oh, okay. We're doing a video, and I just got tongue-tied completely and couldn't pronounce his name when we were shooting the video. But he's the vice president at Online Tech.
Oh, and you didn't save the outtakes for us? Come on, you didn't save the blooper reel?
I know.
Seriously?
The bloopers. Huh? We did like 12 takes. Him and I are laughing, and it was fun.
Yeah.
But anyway, we digress. So today, I guess we're going to be talking about the WannaCry ransomware attack of a week ago, I guess, now, right?
Yep.
So take it away, Nick. I'm real familiar with it, but I suppose we should explain to people what was happening because they may not be familiar. Why don't you go ahead and explain it, Nick, what was happening?
Sure. So in a nutshell, there's an exploit within Windows, within most of the Windows operating systems that allowed for a user to essentially escalate their privileges and attack a machine through the common file sharing services, SMB or server message block services. So WannaCry was a ransomware virus that spread fairly quickly last week before in the wee hours of the morning before Friday when a researcher inadvertently, or accidentally, I should say, hit the kill switch. And probably heard a whole lot of news about it at that point.
Yeah, it mostly hit Europe and Asia. We didn't get too much of it over here because our machines are patched, right? And Microsoft had issued a patch several months ago, and it was mostly XP machines and things like that that were unpatched that were nailed, right?
Yeah, so I think it was a little bit of luck and a little bit of that. So FedEx is probably the biggest one we heard about as far as the U.S. side, but you're right, Europe and Asia was the biggest impact. And being that the kill switch was hit early in the morning before we rose to go to business, part of the speculation is a lot of us just didn't have a lot of people just didn't have their computers turned on in order to be infected while that was spreading before the kill switch was hit. Mm-hmm. But of course, there are now variants out, so we all do need to go and look at protecting ourselves. Because this exploit is going to be very popular in the coming weeks.
So how important is it for people to sort of get their updates automatically or close to automatically? Is that something you recommend?
Well, we highly recommend it. if you're not getting them automatically, then you got to be very diligent about making sure that you're on top of it soon after Microsoft releases patch. For instance, in this case, Microsoft released this patch back in March. So this vulnerability was found, it was known about, it was patched. Those who apply their patches automatically or very diligently on a regular basis, they had mitigated this attack before it ever happened.
Hmm. But people didn't download the patch, so they were unprotected.
Yeah, that's one of the problems. And, the second problem is that there are, a number of things that you can do to prevent this exploit. And it sort of took a lot of those things to be open. For instance, making sure that you block this service on your firewalls if you're not using it, shutting off this service on your web servers or database servers if you're not using it. Anytime we leave those doors open and then a vulnerability like this also exists, that's a recipe for ransomware.
And healthcare got hit particularly hard in the UK, right? I guess what, they had older machines they hadn't patched?
Really did. If you read any number of these news stories, you start to see a pattern. It seems to be healthcare, a lot of telecommunications as well. Noticeably missing is kind of the financial industry. We would speculate a little bit on that, a lot of older machines running. The one you heard about the most was the UK's National Health Service.
Mm-hmm.
But the compliance bar for financial industry is very high. And I think most notably why we didn't hear about a lot of banks and financial institutions is that bar being so high, there are some pretty strict requirements around patch management and vulnerability management in, say, PCI compliance that aren't quite as rigorous in a lot of the healthcare compliances. So I think that probably attributed to some of the success in the financial industry being able to largely have this pre-mitigated as opposed to under other industries.
Sure, and a lot of it is, you know, people running older version of Windows, right? I mean, there's like still millions of copies of XP and earlier versions of Windows 7 out there that are no longer supported, right, by Microsoft.
There really are, and so Windows 7 was the most hit with this particular ransomware, but yes, there's a segment, probably about 5% of the Windows operating systems running out there. It's still Windows XP, an unsupported operating system, and it gives us all a clue into how critical it is to patch against this particular vulnerability. Well, Microsoft actually did come out with an out-of-band patch for Windows XP, which they haven't done in years. So, Windows 7 and Windows XP machines, very vulnerable. Windows 8, if anybody's still running that, or Windows Vista, which was tucked in there somewhere, also vulnerable. Just critically important to keep those systems up to date. And this is a technical debt problem, right? This is a, you let this go, and pretty soon months go by, years go by, and there's all these vulnerabilities open on your machines and on your servers. You don't want to let that stack up and suddenly have a recipe for you know, a nightmare like this.
Oh, I think the element of the story I found the most interesting was the NSA created this attack vector, and then someone borrowed it from them and used it against everybody. Funny thing.
Yeah, you know, I don't know if it's created or discovered. That's always an argument in security circles or in development circles. Is the bug created or discovered? So, certainly they discovered it, and you know, it's the media in some cases is going to the step of kind of pointing at the NSA for this. And,
yeah, we always
you know,
do.
I'm kind of I gotta take responsibility for me and my own. If I'm not updating my systems, well, it's probably more on me than it is on the NSA and its exploit. Unfortunate that this was left unmitigated for so much time, but you know, really credit to Microsoft. Once the documents were released, they worked hard to get a patch out. We got to take advantage of that.
Now, HIPAA, I know, is an American vehicle. Do any of the other countries have something similar to HIPAA, where they have all the – because you were talking about how the financial industry has a higher standard. I'm assuming that HIPAA then makes the American healthcare industry have a higher standard. But do they have that in Europe or Asia or something similar?
Well, you know, I'm not as familiar with compliancy overseas, so struggle to answer that. What I can say, though, is, you know, when you take a look at our customers and our customer base, whether they're healthcare or financial industry or anything else, this is really about making sure you have a proactive management strategy for your environment, for your infrastructure. And that means not just patching your Windows operating systems, which, by the way, customers of online tech who have OT Manage, we call it OT Manage, Online Tech Manage, who have subscribed to our automatic updates, they mitigate against this immediately. But, you know, you got to take that a step further. That means keeping firmware up to date on servers and on storage systems and on firewalls and routers and switches and making sure that there is a disciplined approach to keeping those systems all up to date so you mitigate these vulnerabilities. So regardless of what the compliance requirements are out there, being disciplined in the approach to avoiding technical debt is really what's important.
Okay. So what else is going on out there we need to talk about? This has obviously made the big head, and I never did get a final number, but it was several hundred thousand folks or machines that fell victim to this, right?
Yeah, I believe we're north of 300,000 machines right now, about $100,000 in ransom paid so far, which, you know, some sources are calling it the most successful ransomware attack out there. I'm not sure I agree with that yet.
No, that's not very much money considering how many
only
machines.
100,000.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think Crypto Locker back in 2015 pulled in about 1.6 million. So I don't think I would necessarily call this the most successful. I would say it's probably gotten the most media coverage, which is great for raising awareness.
And
you know, what's important about that is this exploit is going to get used. It's already got two variants out there, UbiWix, which you probably read a little bit about, and then the newest one, which is Eternal Blocks, which is not a ransomware, but it is a virus that is
basically opening up the doors on the machines it affects using this exploit so that those machines can be weaponized in the future. So there are a number of variants already happening.
Okay, so I'd like to ask you a more general question now. I've been following online tech really pretty much since the company was founded. I just was curious how things are going there now and what are the fastest growing lines of business these days?
Things are going really well. So one of the several lines of business have been really successful. We've talked about disaster recovery as a service on the show before. That's been one of our fastest growing, very successful product. Made it really easy for our customers to go out and get disaster recovery services, buy the SIP, just the little bit that they need. I mean, it's so easy to buy, so easy to fail over in our customer's pocket. So that's been a really fast-growing segment. Of course, cloud is everything. Our virtual private cloud services, they're built around customers who need high performance really want to take that step from moving their workloads off the prem and into a managed private cloud where they have a lot of control over it and understand it and get their hands on it, things like that. The next thing that's coming up for us, we're releasing in June, is actually our hybrid product, where not only will you be able to have Online Tech manage your infrastructure for your storage, your backup, your VPC, your DR services, but also within Microsoft Azure Cloud as well. So for those customers who have workloads that need to go to the public cloud, Online Tech is here to support that as well.
Plus, you're in Kansas City now, which means, hey, great barbecue, right?
Right. Oh, yeah, wonderful barbecue. Yeah, that's right. Recently announced the acquisition of Echo Cloud and two new data centers in the Kansas City area. We're very, very excited.
So how's recruiting going for you? Are you finding it as difficult as I've heard some other people are to find qualified tech professionals?
You know, the really important part is, yes, we are finding it as difficult, of course. It's great to see the economy in Michigan booming, and especially around the tech industry. The really important part is make sure that we keep all the great people we have really, really happy and doing a great job for us.
Well, that probably helps to be in Ann Arbor because, everybody says what a livable city it is. Of course, I live there, too. I'm about 2 miles from your office, so that's convenient for me.
Absolutely.
Yes, and so, but that's good. Let's talk a little bit more about if folks want to get more information, want to get in touch with you or Jan or any of the other characters that inhabit that place, how do they do that?
Absolutely. So a couple of avenues. The very first one is we have an event going on at our Metro Detroit One Data Center coming up on June 1st. We'd love to have any of your listeners and you guys as well coming out and visit us. That information is on our website. Huh. So our website's a great way to contact us, www.onlinetech.com. Just go to the event section. And you can find out all kinds of information about the open house. We'll be there to chat and talk about anything that your listeners want to talk about, whether it's WannaCry or disaster recovery or how great it is to be in Michigan.
Which data center was that again? That was which one?
That's our Metro Detroit data center in down in Westland, Michigan.
Okay, have a right. There.
Okay, that's the one on. Is that on Newburgh Road?
That one's over on, it's on North Hicks Road.
North Hicks, okay, yep, next road over, okay. All right, thanks very much, Nick Lumsden, Vice President at Online Tech, talking to us about WannaCry and the whole cloud computing thing and remote services in general. Thanks very much for being here, Nick. For right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M2 TechCast. It's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And we're back with yet another segment of the M Squared TechCast, and we are proud to be part of the PodcastDetroit.com network.
Yep. And we have with us calling in Linda Dishant, who is the CEO, chief cook, and bottle washer for the Mobile Technology Association of Michigan. How big is that organization? How many folks, how many companies, people do you represent?
Well, if you include our Mobile Monday chapters, we're well over 3,000 at this point.
Wow, that's great. Yeah, that's good. And one of the things you flagged me on that you wanted to actually we'll cover in the newsletter this week, but you also wanted to discuss more was you're looking for volunteers to help out. But what would they do? What do you need volunteers for? Why don't you explain?
Well, as you know, the Mobile Monday chapters around the state are a subsidiary of MTAM, and each of those chapters is run by a group of volunteer organizers, and those organizers for each chapter, they work together to come up with the topics for the different Mobile Monday events each month, as well as to line up speakers and, you know, get everything coordinated with the companies that are hosting us and that sort of thing. So we're looking to expand the number of speakers, or excuse me, number of organizers that we have for some of our chapters. We need them currently in Detroit, Grand Rapids, and Lansing.
And if somebody is so inclined, how do they do that? Just go to the website, contact you, or what?
Best way is to contact us at info@gomobilemichigan.org and just put in the subject line about volunteering at Mobile Monday.
All right. So, Linda, tell me about what are the hot topics these days in mobile technology? What are you talking about? What are people bringing up at the Mobile Monday meetings?
Well, you know, a lot of it obviously has to do with connected vehicles and other modes of connected transportation. There's also a lot going on in healthcare, a lot of conversations around Internet of Things, cybersecurity, augmented reality and virtual reality as well. So we've got a lot going on in the industry these days.
Go ahead, Mike.
Why don't you talk a little bit about the mobile? I always get this wrong. It's Mobile Michigan Monday.
Mobile Monday.
Mobile Monday, Michigan.
We were both
always
wrong.
Get that okay. Wrong. I know you've got four chapters in the state, I believe, right?
Yeah, we have Ann Arbor, Detroit, Grand Rapids, and Lansing.
And I'm assuming those are all different Monday nights, so they don't compete.
That is correct, yeah. Now, we will probably end up adding some additional chapters. We're talking with some people in some other cities. So we'll obviously be running out of Mondays, so there will be some duplicates. But that's okay, because usually, for the most part, they're attended by people from that local community. We do have some people that actually go around the state and attend events from all the chapters.
Really?
But there's not a lot of those people. Most of them are coming from that local community, so it wouldn't matter if there were other chapters going on the same day.
Hmm. Okay. We were just talking about some of the hot things going on, some of the hot products. What else is going on in this space? We haven't had you on the show for a couple of months, so give us an update.
Absolutely.
On what's happening.
Well, one of the things that we're really focused on right now, frankly, is trying to get more people into connected technology-related careers, which means we need to make sure that they're signing up for computer science courses and other kinds of courses that are going to lead them into this field, because by 2020, there's going to be a huge shortage of people across the country, and here in Michigan, it's definitely supposed to impact us a lot. So we're working with a couple of organizations right now, including the Michigan STEM Partnership, the Microsoft TEALS program, where we are working with them to help set up programs where volunteers are recruited to go into the classroom and work with teachers to help students get interested and get some training in computer science and other basics related to connected technologies. So that's one area that we're focusing on right now. Another area that we're working on is we're working with a number of different groups for hackathons. We just worked with TechTown for their healthcare hackathon that they do every year with Windsor. And we're also working with a group called NHACS, which is doing a hackathon for high school students in Novi in June. And then we're also working with a group in Ann Arbor doing a health hackathon on June 23rd through 25th. So we've got a lot going on.
So talk about what goes on at these hackathons. What takes place?
Well, it's a little different in every one, but for the most part, the general formula is that some speakers are brought in from the industry to do some education on some specific topics, and then they form groups, or they may come with a group that they want to work with on developing some sort of a project, and they work together as a group. There are mentors that also will attend these events and work with different groups to give them education and advice and to bounce ideas off them. And they put together basically a prototype of their project, whatever it is that they're trying to do, and they present it at the end of the hackathon to a group of judges. And they select some winners, and the winners get prizes. And that sort of incentivizes them to go forward with the next step of actually making it a real product.
So it's basically a coding exercise where you're coming up with some kind of web application usually, right?
Yeah, for the most part. You know, mobile apps, web apps. In some cases, I've heard of some where they're actually working on hardware, where they're doing stuff that involves hardware, but I haven't heard of that as often.
Okay. So, I mean, app development, the whole mobile app phenomenon has become sort of an economic development engine, hasn't it?
Oh, it absolutely has. I can't remember what the latest numbers are, but there are literally here in Michigan, we've got hundreds of companies of all sizes from enterprise level to one and two person small businesses that are working on app development. And it has sort of changed over the years, though, since this all got started. In the beginning, apps were very consumer focused, and the whole idea of them was how many downloads you could get. Now, it's becoming much more sophisticated, and there really is much more of an emphasis on making apps for business purposes. You know, what kind of services can you provide through an app, or how can you operate your business better through an app that your employees can utilize or that your customers can utilize? So they're much more business focused today than they have been.
Which means they're more sophisticated, more security conscious, that kind of thing. You're not just trying to come up with something cute anymore. This has
that,
become
that
a real business.
You can charge a
business.
Buck an app for right yeah. at the Play Store.
Exactly. Yeah. It's much more about having an actual purpose and not just coming up with a cute game or trying to get birds to do something. You know,
I've never played that thing. Destroy yeah, candy
it's
or whatever
more
the hell
about
it is.
Having
I don't
an
know.
Actual purpose yeah. and serving a useful need.
Yeah. Okay. Why are you so mad at candy? Yes, I
don't
to
know.
Know.
I mean, it's just
what did ever do
got
to you?
Addicted yeah. to the game. That's
yeah,
why.
I guess so.
Hey, well, what would you? You see a lot of these apps. What is one that's really kind of blown you away that you go, "Wow, that's really cool"? Any come to mind?
To be honest, no, because I see so many of them. You know, I'm always checking them out, but honestly, there's just so many these days. I mean, pretty much. Everybody has an app. There literally are a million plus in both the Google and the Apple app stores. So it's really hard to be blown away anymore because there's just so many of them.
You know, the thing that concerns me about some of these apps is how secure they are, because not on this phone, but on my previous version, I made a purchase at Walmart, and within an hour, my credit card was being used to purchase all sorts of things. So,
in places where you were not physically present.
Out of the country, which I knew I wasn't at the time.
Yes.
So I'm a little paranoid about
that. Here's the thing that I will tell you. I mean, obviously, as we know, there is no such thing as 100% secure right now. And I'm not frankly sure that there ever will be 100% secure. But you can definitely do a couple of things to increase security. One of those is to make sure that you purchase the app from the actual app store, mm-hmm. or that you download it from the actual app store,
yep.
because that way they have gone through the process and made sure that, you know, they've gone through some security screenings.
Right, yeah.
The other thing that you should do is make sure that you have security software on your mobile device,
mm-hmm.
so that it is screening every app that you have on your device and making sure that it is secure.
All right, Linda, describe to me the leap from, you know, app development and, you know, things like this, things like we've seen in the past, and the connected car, because that strikes me as, you know, I mean, obviously that's something that's like deadly serious. It has to be, you know, because people's safety, people's
safety
is involved.
When you talk about Internet of Things, because the Internet of Things is now, you know, making it able for you to, for example, have a smart refrigerator at home, or even a, you know, smart crock pot or whatever. But all of those things are now going to be connected to your wireless network at home. And this is an area of problem because, frankly, a lot of the consumer products companies that are making these smart devices for home use or for business use are not necessarily paying as much attention to security as they need to. They're not providing a way for consumers to be able to download security updates. They're not advising them to make sure that they put their own password in. And many people are just using whatever password came with the system when they bought it. So, which means they're leaving themselves open to somebody accessing their network through that Internet of Things connected device. Once they're on the network, they can get to their computer and their financials and whatever else.
Hmm.
So one of the things that we're recommending to people is if you're going to have smart devices at home, we suggest having two networks, one for all your smart devices and another for your computers where you have financials and all that sort of thing.
Oh, I like that.
That's
yeah,
a good idea.
Idea.
Yep. All right. Well, Linda, we've got about a little over a minute left. Why don't you tell people once again how to get in touch with the Mobile Technology Association of Michigan and how to volunteer for it?
Absolutely. We always recommend that you go to our website at gomobilemichigan.org. You can find all kinds of information about us there. And we can always be contacted at email at info@gomobilemichigan.org.
And once again, what you're looking for the volunteers for?
For Mobile Monday chapters in Detroit, Grand Rapids, and Lansing.
It sounds like a lot of fun and a lot of good information. Linda Deschamps, CEO of the Mobile Technology Association of Michigan. Thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for having me, guys. Bye-bye.
All right. And this is for right now. This is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M Squared TechCast. We'll be right back with another fun-filled segment in just a minute.
Mike Brennan.
And Matt Rausch.
And you're listening to the fourth segment of M Squared TechCast.
Edition number 83, I think.
Yeah, so you won't hear an issue. I can do this. You won't hear a show next week because Matt and I are taking a little break.
Yeah, Memorial Day is a day off. So
yeah, we even let Jessica have it off. You know, normally she's chained to the desk here. but we decided to unchain her for the weekend.
We have not yet brought in Jess Cam 2000.
Well, we're working on that, though. I'm hearing she's vetoing the Jess Cam because I've discussed it with Dave Phillips, her boss, and our benefactor.
Yes.
So what do you think? Jess Cam, yes?
Jess Cam 2000, man. It's futuristic-like. All right. Well, we want to welcome to the show here Nicole. Pronounce your last name for me again, please.
Passute.
Nicole Passute, CEO of TechStack. And she's talking, by the way, welcome to Detroit Startup Week, everybody. It's Detroit Startup Week. Yay.
Yay.
Okay, all right. Nicole is interviewing for us on our show today in just a moment here. A couple of women who will join her on May 25th at the Women Tech Founders Panel. That's part of Detroit Startup Week. That sounds great. And these two folks are in the studio right now. So, Nicole, why don't you go ahead and take it away and introduce your guests for us.
Great. Thank you. So the Women's Tech Founder panel, again, we've got five amazing ladies that will be presenting and talking. And we have two of them here today, and Elizabeth Mays, as well as Kylie Gunther. So Elizabeth, why don't you tell us a little bit about your company and how you got started?
Okay. So my name is Elizabeth Mays. I am the CEO of MCS Multimedia. We're a progressive graphic design, printing, consulting, and marketing firm. So my business actually originated out of family business. So, yeah, my grandfather back in 1946 started a printing company called Mays Printing Company. And it, of course, expanded from 1946 all the way up into 2011. And right when I graduated from college, I actually took over my family business and turned it into a multimedia business. Yeah. So I'm actually from an existing company, but we actually transformed everything and actually created more services, more products to actually reach our captive market.
Yep, that's amazing.
Yes.
Congratulations. And
Thank you.
Long history of family history.
It
there,
is.
Right?
71 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, my grandfather started it. And then back in the 1970s, late 70s, my father, of course, graduated with the same degree and then took over the family business. And me, when I graduated from Western back in 2011, my degree was in film, video, and media. And then I minored in graphic and printing sciences. So I definitely got my education in the family business before trying to, of course, just take over.
And now you have taken it over, right?
I kind of have. In a good way.
Kylie, how about you? You are an engineer, and we'd love to hear about your organization as well and how you got started.
I actually am not an engineer.
Oh, correct. Oh, I'm sorry.
Stand corrected.
My bad.
I have engineering skills in the world of hard knocks. We'll put it that way.
Okay.
My dad is actually an engineer, and we started the company together 4 years ago, but he had some other things to take care of and stepped out. So now I've taken it over. And what we do is we're an advanced engineering and materials manufacturer. So we do engineering services and composites engineering, and we also manufacture lightweight, durable, sustainable, and eco-friendly plastic materials by incorporating bamboo. And they're used in many different verticals, such as automotive, home and housewares, and packaging.
Okay, and what's the name of the company?
We're called Spectalite.
And where are you based?
We are based in Sterling Heights.
Okay.
And you're a global company, is that correct?
Yes, we are. We actually have facilities here in Michigan, India, China, and we're going to be starting something soon in the EU.
That's awesome.
Hopefully not in the UK, though, right?
No, not the UK.
They're exiting, yes.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about hurdles and obstacles, just from what you've had to overcome, Elizabeth, just as a founder and CEO, woman CEO, what kind of struggles that do you come across that do you think are unique to your business and to what you're doing?
Well, definitely one thing that's unique to my industry is that it's a male-dominated industry. As you can tell, I had two men that came before me, and I took over the family business. And normally it's not usual that a young lady would take over a family business, but I was prepped early. I started to take care of my household when I was around 13, 14, because my mom had got sick. Ooh. So then I started picking up responsibilities like adults do. And I think that was one thing that definitely equipped me. Now, the one disadvantage that I did have, well, not necessarily disadvantage, is that I did go into a business without having a business background. And just like if you think about it, 50% or more of entrepreneurs didn't get their degree in business or, mass marketing or what have you. We kind of went into it with like a passion and with some kind of drive and some kind of meaning behind it. And I think definitely growing up a little bit early and, of course, understanding and seeing my father and my grandfather work extremely hard, regardless of the circumstance, to take care of their household and, of course, the livelihood of their employees. I kind of saw that, you know, and I started to embody that. So one thing is that I am in a male-dominated society. When I'm actually networking and I'm going to these conferences and I'm pitching or what have you, I don't see a lot of women like myself. And there's not. So I have to, of course, channel with inside and, of course, actually think about what it is that I'm trying to accomplish at the end of the day in order to do it. if I had to think of one other thing is that being able to come up with a strategic plan to financially grow your technology business is not easy. So I definitely learned, not necessarily the hard way, but I did struggle a little bit in the beginning because technology is ever evolving. The question is, are you going to buy or are you going to lease? The question is, are you going to hire someone that you're looking to train, or are you going to hire someone that's already equipped? And I definitely did learn early on unnecessarily what was it like to actually create a budget flow plan and to properly grow your business so that you don't try to move too fast and then, of course, collapse or move too slow where you're not catching up with the rest of technology.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Kylie, how about you? What hurdles or obstacles do you think have been unique to your industry and what business you're building?
For me, my biggest obstacle is always time. There's a great quote in Alice in Wonderland. It's my favorite movie. It says, you have to run as fast as you can just to stay in place. And to get anywhere, you have to go twice as fast. And that's how I feel every day. And when we were really small and didn't have any type of team to support us, you have to do everything. So some days I was IT. Some days I was sales. Some days I was doing everything. So it's
I think I can relate to that.
Yeah. Being an entrepreneur and being a startup is a roller coaster in more ways than one.
Oh my God, yes.
Yeah. How about staying focused? Kylie, how do you stay focused with all of those things you have to do and all of those hats you have to wear and you're traveling globally? How do you stay focused?
I actually think I have the exact opposite problem. I need to learn when to take a little bit of time off.
Yeah, yeah. Elizabeth, how about you? How do you stay motivated?
Well, the fact that I have 70 plus years that my family has worked so hard to maintain.
But she doesn't look any more than 39, I think. You know? Can't possibly be 70, right?
Just a tenderoni.
Oh, yeah.
So I stay focused literally by thinking back when I was younger, watching my grandfather administrate his staff. And literally, when I was a kid growing up, I was like, hey, my name is Elizabeth Mays. And people automatically were like, are you related to Mays Printing? And I'm like, yes. So they automatically thought that I was a big shot. They thought that I was, you know, we were extremely rich and et cetera. So I'm used to having a lot of responsibility on me without even doing much. So thinking back on what my grandfather put in, literally, he was a young black male in the 1940s trying to start a business for himself. And I know that was not easy. In Detroit. Absolutely, in Detroit. And then he grew that and passed it over to my father. So what keeps me motivated and keeps me focused is knowing what my grandfather and my father built before me and the fact that the last thing I want to do is, of course, make them look anyways bad. Or, you know, or not, you know, carry the torch like I should. So that motivates me.
Nicole, can I step in for just a second?
Sure.
I was just curious, how big are both of these businesses in terms of number of employees?
So we actually combined it. So back in 2011, my family business consolidated. Mm-hmm. So they actually closed the big operation that was on Livernois in Detroit. And that's when I took over and moved the business to Ferndale. And at that time, you know, we were growing. We consolidated to grow back up again. So we had about four or five employees. And then now we've grown up to nine.
Okay.
Yeah, now we've grown up to nine.
All right. And Kylie?
And we're at 26 globally right now.
Okay.
We have 5 here in the States, and we're actually right now getting ready to start our own manufacturing facility.
That's awesome.
Here in the Mitten.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, great.
Whereabouts?
That's awesome.
I'm still looking at real estate.
Ah, okay.
So somewhere
somewhere in the metro area?
Yeah,
though?
Somewhere close around here. I don't know if you guys know this or not, but we actually started in Ohio. So I worked really, really hard to bring my company back to the Mitten.
Yeah, we love that in creating jobs in Michigan for all of us.
Well, we don't refer to that state down south other than that state down south.
Mm-hmm. And they know what we're talking about.
Yeah, Mike is a graduate of the University of Michigan, and so it's, the O word is not stated around here.
We don't talk about it.
He goes as far as Tony Pacos and no farther.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, okay. But Elizabeth, I wanted to ask also, how have you coped with sort of I don't want to say the death of print because it's still around, but, you know, the print media is not what it used to be. So how have you shifted the company to compensate for that?
So my father is still in business with me. He is my VP, and he literally does this to me every day. Here, do something amazing, on top of the fact of mentoring me. So the thing is that once they closed operation is because a lot of the printing phases started to phase out. So what I did was instead of thinking that the glass is halfway what does they say, empty?
Half full.
I saw that it was half full, and I started to think of what other things can I use and do to fill this glass back up. So that's when we started to offer graphic design, web design. We started to offer marketing for our clients who were looking to expand their brand, because when printing started to die down some, the question is, where was all the other business going?
Yeah. Did you do newspaper inserts?
We didn't do web. No. Okay. So we did digital and offset, one and two color press. So we just had to figure out other ways that clients were trying to market and advertise themselves since they weren't using printing. So we did that. We started to offer those other elements, and we started to consult our clients. So then we noticed that there was still a lot of business that was out there. It's just that it was in different forms. And we made ourselves available with my degree in film, video, and media. And then, of course, incorporating a new element or product or service every 6 to 8 months to make sure that we're always on the right path to servicing our clients the best that we can. Huh. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
All right. And Kylie, I wanted to ask you about the products based on bamboo. Where did that come from?
Yeah.
Well, we wanted to do something that was environmentally friendly and useful in a lot of different capacities. And we studied the mechanical properties of a lot of materials, and we liked what bamboo had to offer. Bamboo, for example, grows really fast, so you can turn it around a lot faster than trees. A fun note, bamboo holds the Guinness Book World Records for the fastest growing plant.
Oh, wow.
And okay. Also, in Asia, people use the stalks of bamboo to build high-rise scaffolding. So if you're climbing 50, 60 stories in the air, you know it's strong. So we knew it had the properties we wanted for the materials that we wanted to make.
Yep. Does she know Amanda Luan? No.
Not yet.
Bamboo Detroit.
I was gonna put the connection together. Bamboo Detroit.
Yeah. She picked the name Bamboo because it grows so fast,
and so she has a business incubator or co-working space called Bamboo Detroit.
I got all excited when I saw that one day. I was like, oh, what are they doing with Bamboo Detroit?
And her business is growing extremely fast. Which is absolutely good.
But you don't use bamboo, though, right?
We don't use bamboo. Oh, okay. But we actually use a couple of plastics that she does. So
we were talking about that in the lobby.
We were. So we don't just print on paper. We print on plastic. We print on, cardboard. There's a number of different substrates that we print on.
And you can print on our bamboo fabric that we're developing. Hello? I'll have to get you some.
Look at us.
Wow.
All right.
Look what you've done,
we're
Nicole.
We're creating business already.
Yeah. There we go. Okay. Now, she gets a finder's fee. Though,
Everybody heard it here.
You did. It's okay. We believe in supporting each other.
All right, so I'm going to steal one of Nicole's questions here that was on her sheet here, but I wanted to know what you're doing to advocate women in technology and or engineering. We're trying to read
the second part of the question.
Well, yes. Yeah, so what would be your advice for young girls going into these fields? So that's a two-parter.
Okay.
Yes. Handle that in whatever order you like.
Okay, sure. So just like, Detroit is definitely ever evolving with new opportunities for youth to engage with adults. So I'm actually a role model, a STEMinista role model with the Michigan Science Center. So yes.
Well, we get Tanya on here every month. So Tanya Matthews.
I'm going to make sure I tune in here. Yep. So I'm a STEMinista role model with the Michigan Science Center. So I actually go out and speak to the young women, mentor them, educate them about what are the different, forms of technology that they can go in that are interrelated to my industry. So I definitely do that. And I'm actually working on a program or two. I can't talk too much about it.
Who would we tell?
It's just us.
The world. So I'm actually working on a program right now to help empower more young women. So I do a lot of career days. I go out and I speak to young children. I read to children and talk to them about my industry and really how fun it is. So I definitely am highly engaged in the community.
For me right now, I'm really focusing on my little tiny cousins. Like, I'm the first girl out of my family to go to college. So they really look to me for guidance, and now they're starting to get ready and go to college. So I've been working with them on that, and I just keep telling them, which I think everybody should tell all little girls and all little boys, you can do it. Just keep working at it. Keep focusing and tune out the noise if someone thinks you can't do it.
That is true. Yep, love that.
All right. Nicole, tell us more about the panel. When is it? Where is it? That kind of thing. We've got about 2 minutes left, I think.
Sure. Mm-hmm. So Detroit Startup Week, we are having the panel session, Women Tech Founders Panel. There will be five of us. So Kylie, Elizabeth, myself, and we'll have Parisa and Dusty as well. So that is at the Masonic Temple on Thursday, May 25th at 11 to 12:30. Lunch is right after that in that same building there. So it should be a great event.
The building has 1,200 rooms, by the way. So I'm a Mason. So.
Wow.
Oh, awesome.
Is there rooms with inside of rooms?
Yeah, it's huge. It's just an amazing building. Yeah. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, and we've got some fantastic sponsors: Invest Detroit Ventures, Inforum, OU Inc., Bamboo Detroit, Wayne State University, and also my company, TechStack. So we're really excited. We've got about 50-plus people signed up already, but we're really looking to pack the house. So we want a full room of 100-plus people.
Take us out, Nicole. Reintroduce your guests, and we'll end the show.
All right. So Elizabeth Mays with her multimedia organization, come meet her on Thursday. And Kylie Gunther with Spectalite, also please come meet her on Thursday as well, the Masonic Temple.
All right. We want to thank those guests and everybody who appeared on the show today, our drone law expert, Enrico Schaefer, Nick Lumsden, Vice President of Online Tech, and Linda Deschent, CEO of the Mobile Technology Association of Michigan. Another
and just
show.
One programming reminder one more time. We will not be on the air next Monday. Little breaky poo, which we're very excited about.
Yes. We're sure you'll miss us.
But, yes. Going to go get drunk somewhere for a while and have a good time. So how about you? You're going to Traverse City, right?
No. I'm going to Syracuse, New York.
Oh, that's right. You're visiting your son.
Yeah, visiting my son. And okay. I'm going to cut through Canada and see Niagara Falls and all that good stuff.
Niagara Falls.
Slowly I turned. Yeah, okay.
The whole Three Stooges. Okay. Well, you can tell we're getting a little giddy here.
The prospect of a week off.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Okay.
You know, so.
All right. Thanks very much for listening. And right now for the podcast Detroit Network and M Squared TechCast, this is Matt Roush.
And Mike Brennan.
And we'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Thanks for listening to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Join your hosts, Matt Roush and Mike Brennan, next Monday at 3 p.m. If you can't listen live, audio podcasts of the show can be found at podcastdetroit.com.